Let's start what we have come into the room to do. Right on. Here goes.
One, two, three.
Hot in here on WCBN FM Ann Arbor. My name is Andrea Krauss, and I'm here with your co-hosts Becca Baylor, Danya Gutierrez, and Rebecca Hardin.
Hello.
With Thanksgiving just around the corner, we have one of the most dichotomous seasons of the year coming up, during which we see amazing displays of generosity and community, as well as enormous levels of consumption. So today's show will feature the nexus between the two by featuring two local entrepreneurs whose businesses strive to create a positive impact on both their customers and suppliers right here in Ann Arbor. Mariana Kerpola, a student at the Herb Institute of Sustainable Enterprise, will join us during the first half of the show. And then during the second half of the show, we'll have Bill Brinkerhoff of Ann Arbor's newly opened Argus Farm Stop. But first, to get us into a seasonal mood, let's turn to Donna Summers' Autumn Changes, because there may be snow outside, but it is not quite winter yet.
That was wonderful. This is It's On Here, WCBN FM Ann Arbor. This is Donnie Gutierrez, and I just want to welcome you guys today to It's On Here. We're going to have a great show for you on this beautiful Friday. It might be freezing, but at least it's really nice outside, right? And it's a little hot in here. What do you think, Becca?
Yeah, super sunny inside and out.
So before we get started talking about, you know, consumption as we move forward with this holiday season and get our guests on the mic, I wanted to take us back 3 whole years ago, it's a long time ago, to a show that we did relating to consumption around this time of year with Scott Rick, a marketing professor here at U of M, and Stephanie Preston, psychology professor here at U of M, discussing the pain of paying. So spendthrifts, tightwads, and the psychology of shopping and how that relates to, you know, consumption during the holiday season and what we'll be talking to later today. So let's play that clip. Tex, who's our audio engineer for today. Woo woo, Tex. Can get that clip on here to see what we should be talking about today and what we should be considering.
Scott is a marketing professor at the Ross School here at University of Michigan, and he's been really doing some work to flesh out the characteristics of the spendthrift versus and the tightwad. Am I right?
Yeah, that's right. The brain study I mentioned earlier, where we found some physical evidence for a pain of paying, got us thinking about whether this is something that differs chronically across people, whether some feel it very intensely and often and others maybe don't feel it enough. And
the pain of paying.
I
love it.
And we do think of it as a psychological distress. It's not like getting hit in the face, but it's more anxiety or worked up. And so we developed a scale, and it does seem to, we call it the tightwad spendthrift scale. And we do find that there are a lot of tightwads out there. You hear about the spendthrifts, but there are a lot of people frustrated with how little they spend. They have big bank accounts, but it's not because they were planning on saving money. It's just kind of left over from frustrating episodes where they can't indulge. Spendthrifts have the opposite problem. They don't have enough distress when it's time to spend money. So they spend a lot of it, and they're unhappy with that as well. And then there are a lot of people in the middle who we call unconflicted, and they're less interesting because they're happy and well adjusted and
financially
study them.
Viable.
Boring.
Yes.
What about you get the two of those together? It must be like fireworks,
yeah.
Right? What do we know about that?
So typically the finding is that birds of a feather flock together. We basically go out, at least when it comes to romantic relationships, we go out and we marry ourselves. So somebody who's similar on all kinds of dimensions, but it had been proposed that, hey, if there's something you don't like about yourself, maybe you don't go out and look for that.
Paula Abdul actually was the one who spearheaded that with the Opposites Attract song back in the early 90s?
No, I have that
cassette.
She was
cassette, the one that spearheaded
and
that campaign.
I love that you have that cassette.
But, so we thought that...
We can cue that one up, too.
So we thought that the Abdul prediction was kind of custom made for our own reasoning about tightwads and spendthrifts. So we went out and looked for it, and indeed we found that tightwads and spendthrifts tend to marry each other. And
really?
It's a very rare instance where opposites consistently attract. But we call it fatal fiscal attraction because this seems to be bad news, that the more they're different on this dimension, the more they fight over money. The less happy they are with the marriage, they wish they married somebody else. And this is even controlling for how much money they have, how much debt they have. So a spendthrift does better off financially by marrying a tightwad, but they're happier in debt with another spendthrift.
Yeah, I almost feel like it would be kind of like that, a good fling to have with the, you know, the opposite of like, oh yeah, this is like a fun, like, you know, summer, or like weekend getaway or something. But then when it really comes down to it, I feel like... Yeah, I could see where you'd want to be with somebody who had the exact same kind of, or at least similar kind of spending habits to you.
Well, so what do we think about this in the holiday season? It's got to be a nightmare if you've got the shopping list and one of you has got these generous, impulsive behaviors like, oh, I know little Nikki would love that. Are you kidding me? You're going to spend that on Nikki? Like, how does that work?
That's where divorces happen.
Yeah, well, maybe. Or at least, I don't know, kind of a snarky holiday season.
Yeah.
Do we see? And I don't know, Scott and Stephanie, what the differences are, because a lot of the research that the two of you have talked about today is about individuals presumably spending for themselves or their own households. And I don't know what the, you know, gift buying and sort of ritual exchange element of the holidays does to all these impulses. Do we know anything about that yet? Or what's it look like?
I was just going to mention one finding we have, and then I wanted to ask Scott a question where somebody else had proposed, well, maybe compulsive hoarders are actually sort of miserly, you know, like the Ebenezer Scrooge character, and they're hoarding and they're keeping and they're greedy and selfish. Mm-hmm. So we did a little test of this, and we did some survey research on how much money people spend and how much they donate to charities, how many gifts they give to others. And compulsive hoarders actually donate the same amount to charities, but they give significantly more to others in gifts. And when you have, I don't know if you've ever seen like these hoarding shows, but they're always saying, no, I have to keep this to give to so-and-so, and this I'm saving for my daughter, and these are a trunk full of gifts I bought for people because they were on sale, but I haven't actually given them to them. So there seems to be some pro-social drive in there. It's just not efficiently managed. So we're interested in following up on that, but...
A lot of you may have seen some information about Scott Rick on the banner headlines of the U of M website this past fall. His research continues to get enormous media attention, and we here at WCBN-FM Ann Arbor feel really proud to be one of the only free-form radio networks that's covered Scott's work, although he has been featured on CNN, all kinds of national media outlets, newspapers, Wall Street Journal, ABC, NBC. So last time he was on the mic with us here, we were talking about all the different reasons why people go to the stores around holiday time, why they spend and overspend. And Scott himself had all of us laughing in studio that day, talking about some of the guilt purchases that he himself and others he knew had to make around holiday time.
I mean, I want to know, Becca, are you planning on shopping on Black Friday?
I am not planning on shopping Black Friday. Thank you for asking that question, though, because I wanted to ask you guys what your plans were and how you navigate this moral dilemma on whether or not to go and buy a surplus of things on that, or how you balance that in your own lives. I know I personally spend a lot of my time at thrift stores as opposed to actual markets.
Yeah, no, I will admit, I love Black Friday. I have so much fun. I think it's more of just the experience of going and doing some, like, really hilarious people watching. But no, certain things, like, you know, I go and find, you know, my new long sleeve shirts for the winter and save a little bit of money. I mean, we are students, so we're looking for a bargain. Mm-hmm. You know, I won't pretend that a bargain's important to me. but definitely in terms of gifting, it's a little hard because, you know, I don't think people in my family personally like receiving something that's been used. You know what I mean? So it's a little it's a struggle to balance, like, you know, my own personal beliefs in the way I give and how, you know, people are going to perceive that through mm-hmm. the gift.
Marianne, this might be a good time to introduce our guest, Mariana.
Absolutely.
And could you tell us a little bit about what you do and perhaps how that relates to this idea of sustainable consumption, especially with goods?
Sure. So I recently started a company called Better Hope, which is an online marketplace for products made with dignity. So that is, we curate clothing, gifts, accessories, home decor products that prioritize social justice and human rights in their supply chains. So that might mean that there's fair trade or maintain living wages, various initiatives to try to prioritize the human producer and maker of the products over, you know, just the aesthetic or kind of brand value of the product. Mm-hmm.
And for those of you who are not listening to us on the air but are streaming us on your laptops, we want to remind you that if you tune into our website, if you stream from our website, www.hotandhere.us, or from the WCBN-FM website, we will be posting links to the websites Mariana is describing, and you can learn a lot more just by pointing and clicking.
It's interesting that you point out that there's a lot behind the products that people buy and knowing essentially where your products come from, not only what products go into it, but who is making these. Can you speak a little bit more about who is fabricating these products, these clothes, furniture, as you mentioned, within your own organization?
Yeah, so we actually curate the producers of other brands. So one of my favorite brands is Mata Traders, which is a fair trade brand of mostly women's clothing and accessories that are made in India. And they have these really, really beautiful block print fabrics. And all of the workers in this workshop are paid a living wage. They also receive education, health care, you know, child care, other support services to take care of not only of their work life, but also ensuring that they escape poverty. And so those are that's just one of the examples of the brands that we promote that are ultimately social enterprises. So yes, they're producing these clothing and selling them, but they're trying to create transformative change in these people's lives and hopefully aiming to alleviate poverty. And I guess another thing I'd like to note is that the apparel industry is primarily an industry of women. So garment workers are overwhelmingly low-skilled, low-income women. And so that's one of the primary reasons why I've been so passionate about this field is because it's not only a way to transform my own consumer behavior and the customers on my websites, but also transform the lives of women around the world and allowing them to live healthier, more sustainable lives.
That's a really powerful perspective that definitely connects the dots between, I think, various things that you're passionate about. So I commend you for that. Just to get us into the mood a little more of talking about clothes, we are going to play a song called Shopping for Clothes by the Coasters, who were an R&B group in the 1950s who largely inspired the doo-wop movement a decade later. And this is just a really fun song about what it's like to find the perfect suit and just know that it's right for you. So let's go there now.
I was shopping for a suit the other day and walked into the department store. Stepped on the elevator and told the girl, dry goods flow. When I got off, a salesman come up to me. He said, now what can I do for you? I said, well, go in there and show me all the sports clothes like you supposed to. He said, well, sure, come on in, buddy, and dig these fabrics we got laid out on the shelf. He said,
pick yourself out one, try it on, stand in the mirror and dig yourself. Ooh, that suit's pure herringbone.
Ooh, yeah, that's a suit I'd like to own.
Ooh, buddy, that suit is you.
I see for the businessman, you featuring the natural shoulder that retail, wholesale, and indeed. It's got the custom cuffs and the walking chalk, he said.
And I'm gonna let you have it a steal.
And for the playboy, you have the latest in tweed with the cutaway flap over twice. It's a box back two button western model, he said.
Nah, ain't that nice?
Ooh,
them buttons are solid gold.
You made a deal, so.
Ooh, that collar's pure camel hair.
Ooh, and you can just set that right there on that chair. And you get that paper and let me sign on the dotted line. And I'll make sure I get all my payments in right on time.
Wait a minute, buddy, let me go back and do a little checking on you.
Then the man, he come back, he say, I'm sorry, my man, but
your credit didn't go through.
Why, what you mean? Ooh, ain't this a shame? My heart's in pain.
Ooh,
pure herringbone.
That's a suit you'll never own.
Lord have mercy. I got a good job sweeping up every day.
Welcome back to WCBN FM Ann Arbor. We are It's Hot in Here, and we are here with Mariana Kerpola talking about her new online marketplace for products made with dignity.
When I was digging through the website, I saw that you have a whole section that's dedicated to stories. And could you just tell us a little bit about that and maybe how that ties into the women and the people that are creating the clothes that you're
getting? Absolutely. And I actually think this ties into some of our earlier comments about Black Friday, because, you know, we all know it feels really great to get a deal. But, you know, think of that last time when someone said, like, oh, that's such a great sweater you have, or I love your scarf. And you've responded, yeah, I got it for 50% off from Macy's. You know, what kind of connection that does that build between you and that other individual? You know, it's somewhat superficial. You know, it's really kind of this, you know, focus on the self. And I guess the reason why I want to promote these stories is that, you know, the clothes that we wear are intrinsically connected to who we are as individuals. And, you know, if you transform that question of, oh, I love your scarf, I love your sweater, and then you can say, oh, actually, you know, it was made by this woman in Peru, and she was earning a living wage, and now she's able to send her children to school and afford her their school fees, book fees, their uniform fees, you know, all of a sudden, you know, that piece of clothing that you love, that you think is really cool and stylish, also starts to represent who you are as an individual, you know, what values you evoke. And that's kind of the meaning of these stories. So, yeah, I guess that's it.
Excellent. And you're wearing a lovely garment today. Was this purchased from one of these curators? through your organization?
It actually isn't. It's so I'm wearing a sweater that I've had for probably 6 years now.
Those are the best sweaters.
Yeah. And I think I actually bought it in my senior year of college. Like, I don't actually remember where. I think it was like a boutique in Chicago where I went to undergrad. But I guess that's the other point. You know, as much as I want to promote and espouse, you know, buying ethical clothing, you know, that's not necessarily the only way to live a sustainable lifestyle or have a sustainable wardrobe. You know, keeping clothes for more than one season is a huge way to lower your consumption impact on the world. And I particularly picking out the clothes that maybe are a little bit more expensive but will last through multiple seasons is really important thing if you are out there on Black Friday looking for deals.
I think it's great that you mentioned that there isn't only one way of, you know, purchasing sustainably. You know, one of the things that I've been thinking about this week and something that I always think about around the holiday time is a lot of the sustainable clothing or sustainable food or sustainable products in general are really, really expensive. So, you know, how is this something that is just an issue with the industry, or are we just waiting for these markets to develop so that people who can't afford them, who want to make these conscious decisions, who, you know, I think it's easy to assume that they're just not thinking about it at all, but I think, you know, we're all trying to do the right thing. So how can we promote this decision making, this conscious decision making to people who really don't have the resources to, you know, purchase the way that we think is the best way to, you know, I think that's just something really, really important to consider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think actually Michael Pollan deals with this topic quite well, in that he kind of stratifies, you know, people who can afford the ethical, sustainable food options over those who may not be able to afford it. And he says that if you can afford it, you really should make those choices, because that's what allows these producers to expand their supply, ultimately scale their businesses, and allow them to lower their prices. And that's really what I'm doing with Better Hope, is trying to promote these products so that more people are aware of these really amazing brands that make beautiful products that aren't actually that much more expensive than, you know, something you might see at the mall. And so if you can afford those options, go, please do make that choice, because it allows for more people in the future to possibly afford the more sustainable and ethical mm-hmm. options. You know, if you can't afford them, then maybe there's other ways to do it. We talked about thrift stores. A University of Michigan alum actually started a company called Thread Up. It's THRED Up, which sells brand name, you know, products from like Banana Republic, Tory Burch, you know, really high-end products that are used. And I've actually bought quite a number of my business clothes through that site. I am in business school, so I need business professional clothing every now and again. And that's a really great place to look to buy clothes that essentially look like new from reliable brands that are really, really affordable.
You know, that also just gets to the heart of having the information, right? Just which is makes such a big difference in the choices that we make. I had never heard of ThreadUp. I'm definitely going to go home and look this up, because that sounds incredible. So I think it's also just sort of being in a network among people, or, I mean, the web is a huge tool that now allows for us to learn about stores and business models, and even just like, you know, these clothing swap activities that allow us to make choices that we hadn't even considered before, right? So that's really powerful. And I know information and tech to you is also a really, it's an important part of what you're passionate about, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, I think it's interesting, like the ethical clothing movement is probably where the ethical and sustainable food movement was maybe 20 years ago. And so it's interesting to think, you know, 20 years ago, if you were trying to find, you know, organic local food, you know, maybe you did live in Ann Arbor and you were lucky to have the farmers market, but many other places there weren't those options. And so I guess that's why I'm really excited about the prospect for food, or sorry, for clothing, because I imagine that 20 years from now, we will have more of that information and more people will be able to make choices that align with their values.
that's another reason why we're excited about the Stack Up on the show today, with both you on the mic and soon a call in from two local entrepreneurs, Kathy and Bill, who've been involved in the local food movement on these issues. I think it's really fun to think across those sectors and talk mm-hmm. across those sectors when we get a chance to do so.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, that also brings up an important point that people, for these sort of movements to really be able to take off, you need people who also are entrepreneurs, right? And are willing to take that leap and start a labor of love that is going to probably cost, you know, definitely time and effort and money to start businesses such as Better Hope. And Mariana, a big part of also why we really wanted to have you here today was to talk about the organization that you launched, Women Who Launch, and if you could maybe tell us a little bit about that and tell our listeners what it's all about.
Yeah, so Women Who Launch is a new initiative that we started at University of Michigan, where we are hoping to create gender-equal entrepreneurial ecosystems. And part of that belief is that it's not only having more female entrepreneurs, but also female venture capitalists and female team members. And the belief that having more gender-diverse entrepreneurial teams and systems will lead to better solutions for all of our community members. And I guess the kind of genesis of Women Who Launch was very much my own experience trying to launch Better Hope. You know, I went to a lot of entrepreneurial meetups and trainings and workshops and, you know, got a ton of information, but realized I was usually the only woman in the room. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not to demean the other gender, but I was somewhat disappointed with some of the ideas that were coming from the men in the room, and in turn was having these amazing conversations with women who are, you know, would say like, oh, I have this amazing, you know, idea that could use technology to transform education or health or hospital services. And I was like, why aren't you in this room? And more often than not, the answer was like, well, I don't know where to begin. It's just a silly idea. It doesn't mean anything. And so I wanted to transform that thought process to a very action oriented that you can start a startup tomorrow. And it just becomes it starts with having a support group around you to find those connections and possibilities.
Just an update from the engineering end of things. I wanted to let our listeners know, and also those of us in studio today, that apparently we're having some trouble with the server itself, and so our internet connectivity is spotty at best, and that's causing us to revert to one of the things we love most about WCBN-FM, which is the archive, right? We're going through some CDs and some vinyl looking for tunes that would fit with the conversations we're having today. And as any of you who know this station know, that's a beautiful thing to spend part of a morning doing, because the archive here is out of control. So get ready for some great tunes. We do also have a call-in waiting on the line, and we're able to go in even greater depth than usual about the way that these changes in a sector like clothing and food shape up. I think we should take our caller before we take a tune and get started thinking, as we said earlier, across the food and clothing movements on these issues, right, of ethical consumption. Meanwhile, Pearl and some of the other team from IHIH are in the archive looking for some tunes that we can listen to in the latter half of the show. So stay with us here at WCBN-FM Ann Arbor, and let's take a phone call. I hear you, Bill. Thanks for calling us. How are you today?
I'm very, very good.
That's great. We appreciate you calling in. I don't know if you've been able to listen to the early part of our show at all, but we've got a fantastic guest in studio who was actually just saying that she feels that the ethical consumption of clothing and the fashion industry is right now. What was it you said, Mariana?
I'd say about 20, 25 years ago, where the food industry was, or food movement.
So she was kind of spinning the food industry as pioneers of ethical consumption and smarter shopping and meeting of basic needs. And to that end, we really wanted to get you and Kathy on the phone to talk with us about your brainchild, the Argus Farm Stand, which is on Liberty right here in Ann Arbor. Bill, I wonder if we could just ask you to tell us a little bit about that stand. What does it do? Where is it? What's it all about?
Sure. The Argus Farm Stop is on Liberty, 325 West Liberty, which is downtown Ann Arbor, on the corner of Liberty and 2nd. So as you go down Liberty, across Main Street, past downtown Home and Garden, you go across the train tracks, and a couple hundred feet up on the left is Argus. We've taken what used to be a service station built in 1939 and been working to renovate it and bring it into service as an everyday farmer's market and coffee house. We currently have over 75 different producers that are all local that are selling through the market, as well as featuring bruised roast coffee in a coffee house that's in the same building as well.
That's fantastic. What inspired you to open Argus Farm Stop?
Well, we found ourselves, as well as many others, really would prefer to shop local and try to shop at the farmers markets. You know, I've tried to participate in community-supported agriculture, CSAs, where you'd go out to the farm every other week. But we found, you know, in spite of all of these, you know, these great alternatives for buying local, it wasn't always that easy. You know, if you were out of town for a weekend and you missed your market, there weren't many good alternatives. And also, being part of a CSA is really helpful. It's a great thing. But not everyone can get out to the farm or participate in that kind of a structured way to buy local. And so we thought there should be an easier way for people to buy local. We I think also had talked with the producers, the growers, and they had similar concerns that, you know, going out to a farmer's market is great, and they really love it. They love the environment and meeting their customers. But there's a limit to how much revenue you can bring in from one farmer's market. And then by the time you add a second or a third farmer's market, you really spend a good percentage of your time trying to sell your goods as opposed to being able to spend time on the farm actually producing goods. And the other alternatives as well, you know, the CSA alternatives are very nice, except that they have kind of high turnover if you're a producer. And so we saw this need for a better way to shop local. And we are actually dropping our son off at school down last summer in Wooster, Ohio, at the College of Wooster, and came across a store called Local Roots that had been running for 5 years that was an everyday farmer's market, with the crucial difference being that the farmers don't need to be there all day, every day. The store itself provides a single point of checkout, and the farms all own their goods. They price the goods, so you really are buying directly from those farms through a much more convenient mechanism. And so that was really the inspiration for us to begin a, you know, a journey of thinking that this would be a great thing to bring to Ann Arbor. Through lots of discussions last fall, last winter, with the Ann Arbor Farmers Market, with the city, with producers, with customers, we found that a market like this, you know, what is needed in Ann Arbor, and that led us to begin the process to renovate and open it this past summer.
Well, as someone who frequents the Farm Stop, I am very appreciative that you were so thoughtful and how you came up with this idea. And I just think it's really incredible how you found an amazing balance between the producer's needs and the consumer's needs. I think it's really incredible how you came up with this alternative that bridges all of those gaps. I love it. It's great. And your coffee's amazing.
Thank you.
Several of us are running on it right now, in fact. I just want to come clean about that. I feel really good about drinking it. I want to also just explore a little bit about the various ways. I mean, you talked about campus farms. I know that you guys have been involved even in middle school farm projects, like the Tappan Middle School Garden and so forth. I mean, it really sounds like this is a very, very systems-oriented approach for you guys.
Yeah, we've had an interest in local food for a long time. And I think, you know, even as we've traveled, you can really gauge, you know, how a local community, you know, addresses and works with their local food system by going to their farmers markets and really understanding what happens there. You know, in this case, we're surrounded by, you know, a wonderful abundance of farms in the area. And also meat producers and dairy producers, as well as artisanal food preparers. And I think, you know, it's wonderful to have them under one roof, where, you know, from a customer point of view, if you're shopping when you walk in the door at Argus, but the striking difference is that 100% of what you're looking at is local, and you you make that decision first, that you'd like to decide what you're going to make for dinner, and you'll start with what's local, and then you'll go from there. And that is, I think, for a segment of customers that really want to prioritize local, that's the kind of store that they're looking for, and it fits well with their shopping approach.
Yeah, you know, I hear the word local. It's really, I mean, I'm hearing it a lot in this conversation, and as well, you know, even with Mariana, I think it was more so as like the getting a local sense of the people who are producing the clothes that we're wearing
and contextualizing
exactly.
Your purchase.
So I just want to explore that a little bit more and why it's so important. So, you know, I saw Bill that you write, or that it's written on the description of the Argus Farm Stop, that you are growing the local food ecosystem in Ann Arbor. And I just wanted to know, what is your vision of a thriving local food ecosystem? What would that look like? And how is that different from what we have right now?
So I think we have a good start. We have all of the pieces in place. I think the part that is a challenge right now, if you're in the producer side, you know, it can be challenging to make a living producing food. And it was a couple challenges is that the, you know, these high margin outlets like farmers markets are high margin for the farmers. Are one channel, but they're not really sufficient to run your whole farm or your whole organization. I think when I think about kind of a more vibrant food ecosystem, it's one where you have, you know, many producers that are all able to make their living producing food locally. I think it's a system that celebrates the local variation. I think, you know, seeing if you go into you know, larger grocery stores across the country, you start to see kind of a homogenization of what's available. One of the amazing things we've seen at the store this fall is kind of this reemergence of some local varieties that aren't available and don't travel well outside the Midwest, and so they're available locally, and they're spectacular. And I'm thinking of, you know, as the store transition from the tomatoes and the corn of summer into the fall, we ended up with pawpaws, which is a fruit that's grown on a tree that is kind of a cross between a banana and a mango in terms of its flavor.
Pawpaws are the best.
These kinds of things, the hen of the woods mushrooms that were locally foraged, these things to me kind of celebrate what you can find locally, and to have a robust food system where, you know, there's a lot of people who would love to buy these things again if it was easier, you know, if it was every day and that you had a strong connection with the people you're buying from. And so I think this is one thing that would also be a kind of an attribute of a healthy local food system, is it celebrates the local variety in different parts of the country.
Wow, that's fantastic. It really resonates with me because I love pawpaws, but I'm also I'm also a mushroom forager that happened across some hen of the woods this fall as well. So
it was such a good fall for the hens.
It was really good. Chicken of the woods as well. So that's really great to hear you talk about making those things possible. And in order to do that, balancing, you said you had 75 producers in your store. That's absolutely amazing. But to have that variety, that would only be possible by working with local producers on that scale.
And Bill, I wish you could see all five or six of the folks in studio on these microphones nodding their heads and smiling in unison as you're talking on the phone. I mean, the feeling here is that what you guys are trying to do is, in fact, the sort of thing that we'd like to see in a whole lot more industries and in a whole lot more of the, you know, consumer relationship to buying things.
Yeah. Yes.
I know that one of my favorite things about stores that are similar to the Farm Stop is that every time I go in, it's like this new learning experience. You know, I'm not from the Midwest, so I walk in and I have no idea what half the stuff is in there. So it's always nice to go, and it kind of forces me to experiment a little bit with the way I eat and how I cook, and it definitely facilitates a more conscious way of consuming. And it's all
the way under that roof, I think it's all structured very well, and I'm really happy to live a couple of blocks away from there. It's wonderful.
I had my first raw persimmon the other day in there. Has anybody done? I mean, Kathy was in there, and she was like, "What? You've never tasted a raw persimmon?" And I was like, "Well, no. I mean, my grandma used to make persimmon pudding, but so that was, and it's fantastic. And they were these little baskets of them on the shelves. It was so cool. It was so great. Speaking of which, we do seem to have some music that might actually work for us. And right now, we have a track lined up out of the archive that Pearl found for us. It's a reggae track, Mahek Fashek, a reggae artist whose album A Little Patience, which anyone who's started their own company or tried to work sustainably in any of these sectors will certainly embrace as a theme. It was languishing in semi-obscurity in the archive, but someone from the CBN staff has hand-by-hand written review notes for each track on the album. The one we want to play is actually called Someday, One Day, kind of striking that optimistic tone. It's track number 11, and according to CBN staff, it's a slow acoustic that will convince all of us things are going to be okay. Let's give it a try and see what happens.
Where meek and honey flow, there was a sort to play the music. Down by the seaside, where love and misfortune flow, there was the sound to play some music. Visualize my brother man. I defessor who was betrayed by this brother man. Brother sees the use and say, cowards die many times before the day. Cause I and I will never test that no more. Cause I know. I know someday, today, someday, all our trouble will be over. One day, someday, today, all our sorrow will be over. One day, someday, today.
And we are back. It's Hot in Here on WCBN Ann Arbor. Bill, are you still with us?
Yeah, sure, I'm here.
Great. On the phone, we have Bill Brinkerhoff from the Argus Farm Stop talking about growing a local food system, local food ecosystem. And in the studio, we're joined by Mariana Kerpola, talking about her business as well. And Mariana actually came up with a really great comment that she wanted to make. So, Mariana, take it away.
Yeah. Hi, Bill. Nice to connect with you over the radio. I actually am a CSA subscriber through Sunseed Farms, which we absolutely love. The surprise of everything we get each week. But recently I was talking with Tom, our farmer, who is saying that he's selling his products through or excess produce through Argus. And he's so excited because he's earning significantly higher margins than he would over by, you know, selling wholesale or through other outlets. And so I'd love to hear, you know, how did you kind of come up with this like optimization so that everybody wins? Because it really does seem like you've kind of come up with that type of system with Argus Farms.
Yeah, that's great. We love Sunseed, and we were also in their CSA through this summer. So.
Maybe I've been seeing you on Friday mornings without knowing it.
and they've been providing wonderful produce for the market. So the way the system works is they all these producers come in and they own their goods and they price their goods, which lets them really control how their products are commercialized. And really, you know, we're finding they set very attractive prices that are competitive. And because they're getting 80% of the gross sales, they're actually earning a high margin, a much higher margin than they can normally get through other channels. Our store, is small, and these producers come and they resupply twice a week. And so we're not buying and acquiring big inventories and having a lot of back product. What you're seeing in the store is really coming directly from the market that's been harvested recently. And so I think that kind of the elimination of this distribution chain that's in the middle has allowed the farmers to earn much higher margins. And on the store side, you know, it's important, you know, we have the Ruse Rose coffee side and we're doing a coffee shop. That's an important piece to make a model like this work. You wouldn't see too many grocery stores where everything is at an 80% payment to the producer. But our mission at Argus is to help energize this local food ecosystem, and so everything is aimed at making that 80% possible for the farms. And it has really the benefit besides the economics is it's a direct feeling of purchase from the farmers, and so you really know as a consumer. Who you're buying from, the economics are transparent. The other part that makes it work well is that the farms themselves decide what they're going to bring into the market. And we give a little guidance about, you know, what we're seeing more of and what we're seeing less of. But they curate a wonderful mixture to bring in. And so, you know, if you take any item like carrots, for example, you'll see not a backlog of all similar carrots, but you'll see six different varieties of carrots in the store, you know, ranging from multicolored bunches from Tantray to the larger, like super sweet ones from Sunseed, to White Lotus having, you know, bunches of more of an artisanal smaller one, and it changes every week. So, you know, just as I think the comment was made earlier, it's kind of surprising when you go into the store and you see what's available. We at Argus, the staff, all have that same sense of awe about what's coming out of our local food system every week into the store.
That's great. So much to discover. So talking about the variety of the products that you sell, Bill, before we let you go, I wanted to ask you a couple questions about this upcoming holiday, Thanksgiving, which is my favorite, guys. I love Thanksgiving. But I wanted to know, you know, what on the shelves can people look for this next upcoming week? And what would you recommend that's on the shelves right now for this upcoming holiday?
So it's amazing what's on the shelves now, especially given how cold it's become so quickly, that we're still getting local greens in, lettuce, is coming in. You know, the growers that were selected to supply for harvest are ones that, and for sale there, are ones that can grow year round. Mm. They have hoop houses and greenhouses. And so what you'll find are kind of a wide selection of greens, you know, from lettuce to heartier greens to your kales and your chard. Root vegetables are all in, from, you know, turnips to parsnips to, we have kind of a squash-a-palooza set up there because we're working on really looking at the 6 to 8 prominent varieties of squash that are out there and looking to bring the literacy of squash higher. I think a lot of people recognize an acorn squash or maybe a butternut, but we've got some delicata squash, some wonderful varieties. And information about how they're all distinct from each other and which are better for which recipes. So you'll see that on the produce side. We've got Michigan cranberries in as well as Michigan apples and apple cider. I'd say off of the just the Thanksgiving theme a little bit, have just started carrying Bayport fish, which is caught from Lake Huron. Mm-hmm. Have a full selection of fish, as well as started carrying locally grown Michigan shrimp from Okemos, Michigan as well. Came in yesterday.
Wow, that's amazing.
Farm raised and wonderful for a you know, for maybe a part of someone's Thanksgiving dinner.
That sounds incredible. Thank you so much, Bill, for coming on the show. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and thanks for coming down to the store. And it's been a pleasure to talk with you guys today.
Awesome. We'll see you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that was Bill Brinkerhoff from Argus Farm Stop, and this is It's Hot in Here, WCBN FM Ann Arbor. Tex, do you think we have some time for another tune? Yeah, all right. So there's a lot of positive energy in here, so I think this is a good song to transition to. Doug Cox and Salil Butts' Make a Better World. That sounds magical.
Just letting you know, it's coming off of a Northern Blues sampler, Volume 3, and we're singing nothing but the Northern Blues in here with all those green vegetables in the cold. Let's hear some Northern Blues.
Built on skills, but that alone, it don't count, no. What are the sweat and toils of yours and mine? It would not be worth a dime. You gotta live and give, share and care, really put love in the air. When your neighbor's down, you oughta pick him up. Nobody can live in despair. And everybody let's sing, sing, sing. Everybody let's sing. Let freedom ring. Join hands, do your thing. Make a better world to live in. My Lord, everybody let's sing. Sing, sing, everybody let's sing. Let freedom ring. Join hands, do your thing. Make a better world to live in. Society has no priority. We're all a part of the whole. Yes. Whenever people shout, you gotta hear them out. Cause everybody got a good, good, beautiful soul. We gotta come together hand in hand. Really got to do our best. Oh Lord. Now, wouldn't it be a pleasant sight to see the world full of happiness? Everybody let's sing, sing, sing. Everybody let's sing. Let freedom ring. A joint hand, all pitch in. Make a better world to live in.
We're back on It's Hot in Here on WCBN FM Ann Arbor, talking about sustainable consumption, so consumption that we can all feel really good about. We just got off the phone with Bill Brinkerhoff from the Argus Farm Stop, which everybody should visit on West Liberty. And now we're going to talk again with Mariana Kerpola, a dual degree student at the School of Natural Resources and Environment, as well as the Ross School of Business, who is also an entrepreneur and just launched her own business, bringing products made with dignity to you via betterhope.org.
Ayaz?
Yeah.
Mariana, can you talk to us? I mean, I'd imagine it's not the easiest thing to start your own business while you're in graduate school. what kind of a support system did you find while you were starting your business?
Absolutely. I mean, I might start a little further back of why I even came to graduate school. So this idea of how to make clothing supply chains more ethical really started 4 years ago. And the ideas were just like worrying in my head, but really never knew where to start. And I happened to, when I moved back to Ann Arbor in 2011, I happened to meet a friend, Sabrina Sullivan, who is in the Herb Institute. And she was probably my first major advocate of, you know, this is a great idea, you should really do something about it. And then through her, I got to meet a number of Herbers and just fell in love with the community. And so that's really was the impetus for coming to graduate school. And I would kind of maintain that the Herb community has been so supportive and helpful as I've been starting this idea of having like-minded people who are passionate about transforming the world through business. So that's definitely on the emotional support side, which is very important when you're starting a company. But then also resource support. I mean, I love Ann Arbor. I grew up here. I went to elementary and middle school and high school here. Never thought I wanted to move back, but I did 3 years ago. And the entrepreneurial ecosystem here is just so accessible. So I got very, very involved in the Zell Lurie Institute at the Ross School of Business. They probably get sick of me because I'm there at least three times a week.
What exactly is the Zell Lurie Institute?
So the Zell Lurie Institute is a kind of the Institute for Entrepreneurial Studies at University of Michigan, specifically at the Ross School of Business. And so they have a number of amazing opportunities for students to engage in entrepreneurship. Currently, they're running their Michigan Business Competition, which allows students to pitch their business ideas in front of judges, get feedback. And then I think there's an opportunity to win like $50,000 or something.
Wow.
Crazy. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. But I think beyond like those types of resources, just the experts, the people there who are always willing to set up one-on-ones, talk through ideas, provide options, connections, suggestions, has been really, really helpful. And I think through Zell Lurie, I've been connected to many more kind of entrepreneurial enclaves in Ann Arbor. So I've been very happy to get in touch with Ann Arbor Spark or so and do some of their boot camps. Just continue to kind of engage in this community, which I think connects somewhat to our conversation with Bill about ecosystems. Whether it's a food ecosystem or entrepreneurial ecosystem, having these connection points to support one another is really, really important.
And then within that ecosystem where you already found support, but I mean, it seems like something was still missing, which was, again, not the fault of any particular person or organization, but maybe more of a systemic issue, there came the idea for Women Who Launch. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So like I mentioned a bit earlier, the idea is to create gender equal entrepreneurial ecosystems and allow women a very action oriented way to explore their ideas and hopefully transform those into a startup. And I think for me, the transformative moment was, you know, I think halfway through the school year last year, where the whole time I was like, okay, I need a programmer, I need some money, like these are the things that I need to start this business. And it was actually in the Michigan Business Competition last year where Lee Gordon, who's an advisor through Ann Arbor Spark, as well as the Zell Lurie Institute, who recommended that I go through the customer discovery boot camp at Ann Arbor Spark. And going through that boot camp, the idea is, you know, understand your customer first. You know, regardless of what problem or issue you're working on, you cannot come up with a successful solution until you understand your customers. And it was through that boot camp that I really transitioned from this idea of I need a developer or a venture capitalist to validate my idea to, oh my gosh, I can move this idea forward today just by interviewing a customer, interviewing a supplier, and learning more about the needs that I was trying to solve in these kind of clothing supply chains. And that was just such an empowering feeling to move from depending on someone else to knowing every day I could move Better Hope forward. And that boot camp really propelled me to launch the website for Better Hope in October. That's been just such a transformative, empowering experience that, you know, it's a drug and you're like, ah, I want everyone else in on this too. and so that was the kind of the idea of women who launch, you know, how can we provide fill the gap between these women who have amazing ideas and get to, you know, whether it's a workshop at Ann Arbor Spark or, you know, some training sessions through ZLI, or there's a wonderful organization in southeastern Michigan called Inforum that has really great support services for women. But there's still kind of that gap where you need some support in between. And that's the gap that Women Who Launch is hoping to fill. And specifically focusing on students, because while you're in school, you know, it's a really risk-free opportunity to try to launch a business, because even if it fails, it turns into an awesome interview answer whenever you are interviewing for that next opportunity. So yeah, we see this as a unique niche that Women Who Launch can fill.
Awesome. That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that story. You spoke to this a little bit earlier, but can you speak a little bit more about what the benefit is to bringing women entrepreneurs into the scene, to making this a more equal playing field?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's, you know, kind of getting back to this theme of customer discovery and understanding the needs of the population that you're trying to serve. Currently, if 88 to 90% of entrepreneurs out there are men, more likely than not, the problems that they will understand are more related to their life experiences. Mm-hmm. But what about all the life experiences of women or other minority groups that aren't really getting out there and turned into businesses? I may be a little bit biased on this, but, you know, I feel like the mix of entrepreneurs in the social entrepreneurship arena is much more diverse than the traditional entrepreneurship world. Mm-hmm. And so how, I guess my hope is, as we increase women in as entrepreneurs and as venture capitalists, we can also transform the mix of businesses that not only, you know, come up with great innovations for society, but also have a transformative impact socially and environmentally in our communities.
Can you talk just a little bit about why it's also important to have women involved, not just as entrepreneurs launching their own businesses, but as you said, in the venture capital world? And then beyond that, I think I saw on the website also just involved in startups. So even if they themselves are not the founders, being on the team, why are you not just focusing on founders themselves, but the other people involved in the ecosystem?
Yeah, so I guess I'll go through one by one. I guess venture capitalists, it's kind of the same thing. I've felt this. I haven't talked to that many venture capitalists, but I will say I've talked to a handful, and definitely judges in competitions, and there is this gap. You know, I'm there talking about an e-commerce retail startup that focuses on ethical clothing. My target market is primarily women. And so if I'm pitching to a venture capitalist whose background is primarily in, you know, automotive technology, I have a lot more that I need to explain, to justify, to prove than someone, you know, with an engineering automotive background who has some new widget for some car, you know. And I think that's the gap, is by having more ideas and minds on both sides of the equation can help promote and support the female entrepreneurs. Somewhat connected to that is that there isn't actually that much venture capital money out there. And so right now, you know, it really trickles through the existing relationships. And so women are often left out of those bubbles. There's actually, we're bringing a really awesome organization through Women Who Launch to Ann Arbor in the spring called the Pipeline Fellowship, which trains women to become angel investors as a starting point to try to make a more robust system here in Michigan. And then I guess turning to the team members piece, there's a great book that recently came out. I think it's called The Confidence Gap, that shares a ton of research about, you know, kind of cognitive science stuff about, like, how women make decisions, how they're different from men. And you need that on a startup. You know, it's not easy to have to launch a new company. It's the odds are against you. And so the more diverse thinking styles you can have on your team, the higher likelihood that that startup will actually succeed. You know, I guess I relate it to any ecosystem. The more diversity you have, the healthier it will be.
Mariana, that is just so exciting. And the connections are so obvious when you lay it out like that. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
I'm a little worried about when we talk about women who launch, I'm worried about Pearl. I think she may have actually been absorbed by the archive here. I need to go back. And she emerges occasionally with new CDs in her hand. And she's like, how about this? This looks really cool. And the latest actually is a really cool album. It's by an artist called Mike Ladd. And you'll get this, Mariana. The track off this album I want to play is called Sail Away Ladies, which for a Women Who Launch segment seems just perfect for me. It's from his album Nostalgulator. And just know that Mike Ladd has a BA in Black Expatriates in the 19th Century from Hampshire College, and then an MA in Poetry from Boston University. He was a fellow at the Institute for Arts and Civic Dialogue at Harvard before moving to Paris, where he basically makes progressive electronica and hip hop music. Who knew until we had to go into the archives? So let's listen to Mike Ladd's track, Sail Away Ladies, as a kind of soundtrack for what you're building with Women Who Launch. And we'll be back in a flash because DJ Brian's on his way in from an icy accident on I-94. And we're going to run just a little late on It's Hot in Here, which it is. Take it away, DJ Tax. We're going to hear Mike Ladd.
Hello again. This is It's Hot in Here on WCBN FM Ann Arbor, talking to Mariana Kropola,
who is talking to us about an amazing new organization here at the University of Michigan called Women Who Launch, which is creating a gender-equal entrepreneurial ecosystem. Mariana, you had your kickoff event not too long ago. Can you tell us about what that was like? What did the room look like? What was happening in there?
Absolutely. We wanted to facilitate almost an ideation, brainstorm type of session to get women in our community who are interested in entrepreneurship to share their ideas about what they need, what they see as the issues, and, you know, what they want to add to this ecosystem. So we invited students as well as local entrepreneurs, local VCs, everyone who's kind of interested in this world to share their ideas. And we actually did this fun. We had spirit animals connected to each question and then randomize the attendees to go to each question to kind of brainstorm with post-its, you know, how they, you know, what would the Silicon Valley of women's entrepreneurship look like, and what type of content they would like to see for Women Who Launch. And the responses were fantastic. You know, we saw a lot of comments about, you know, mentorship, you know, not having enough role models, how to get over the fear of failure and struggle. And, you know, all these ideas were, you know, some were new, but like a lot of them validated our own hypotheses about the challenges for women in entrepreneurship. But I guess, that was all great. But I think the best part of it was actually this woman. She's a third year student, dual degree student at Michigan, who said she was like, oh, this was such an amazing event because I felt like I was having real conversations about ideas. None of this, you know, superficial small talk about, you know, oh, where are you from? What do you do? It, you know, we were really skipping to the point of like, well, what's your idea? Why are you interested? And women were just, you know, swapping business cards here and there, you know, eager to support one another. And so that ethos is definitely something that we want to maintain with future events for Women Who Launch.
That's so refreshing. Having gone to a string of lots of small talk events, I have to say I really appreciate that. And I love that you recognize that you come in with your own hypothesis, but that it is a hypothesis ultimately, right? And that even though there's a good chance that other women are experiencing what you're experiencing, that you took the time with your co-founders to really have a meeting where you're talking with other women about how they would like women who launch to really impact the space. So I commend you for that. What do you have coming up? What's on the agenda for Women Who Launch?
Yes. So earlier this week, actually, on November 19th, the United Nations had their inaugural Women's Entrepreneurship Day. And, you know, it was in New York. We weren't able to attend, but they had amazing programming, and they're trying to encourage other universities and locations to have events. And so in honor of that, on December 3rd, which they're actually also trying to turn into this Women-Owned Business Day, kind of as a follow-up to all the, you know, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, Small Business Saturday, you know. So Wednesday, December 3rd is Women-Owned Business Day. And I think on Twitter, the hashtag is Women W-O-W, and I'm sure that'll be on the list. But so in honor of that day, at 6:30 on December 3rd, we are having an idea rapid fire event where we want to get these ideas, these amazing ideas that women have out there. And so we're going to have 30 women. Signups are still available if you're interested, to share whatever idea they have. And it doesn't have to have a business plan or a target market or anything. It's just, you know, hey, I'm interested in this and I'm looking for suggestions. And then the remainder of the event will be kind of these rotating groups providing ideas to all the women who pitch their ideas. So again, trying to create an opportunity for business cards to be swapped, connections to be shared, opportunities to be shared. And, you know, moving from this, oh, here's all the reasons why this won't work, to here's all the reasons why this could work. And helping women walk away from that with an action plan of what they could do next.
That sounds like a really empowering event. Where is it taking place and how can people sign up?
Yes, so it is at the Innovatrium, which is 601 East University Avenue in Ann Arbor. And to participate, we actually need, so if you go Saturday to womenwholaunch.org, we will share the information there. We can also share it with the It's Hot in Here folks so that they can add it to their site as well.
Okay, excellent. That was beautiful. Awesome. I think I'm going to get involved and go to that as well.
Yay!
So that's wonderful.
Because, Becca, you're not busy enough, I think.
I don't think so. I have a horrible habit of falling into way too many things.
It's like it's in the water here.
Right. So speaking of things that I'm a little bit involved with and tying it together with entrepreneurship, sustainable consumption, I've got two announcements to make for today specifically. One is that the UMBs is having its mass swarm today. Swarm, another word for meeting, bee style though. And that mass swarm is today at 3 p.m. in the Dana building, room 1024. And there'll be honey tasting and a presentation from a Detroit local food entrepreneur named Rich Wieske. He is lead beekeeper for Green Toe Gardens.
And you can hear him on the archive, www.hotinhere.us. He is on the mic with us for a radio show last spring all about his bees in Detroit, City Bees, who winter well in Michigan. Very cool show.
Yes, captivating individual. So I encourage you guys to go out and support UMBs. And also Rich will have a SNRE student, Remy Long, talking about his work beekeeping in West Africa. So it'll be honey tasting, entrepreneurship, sustainable consumption all the way. So that's the first event. And then the second event is that the Trotter Multicultural Center is having a free holiday feast. It started 18 minutes ago exactly. It started at 1 p.m. And it's at the Multicultural Center, which is on Washtenaw Avenue. So go check it out.
That sounds great. I would just like to thank our in-studio guest, Mariana. You've been so generous with your time on a day when the station's been dealing not only with icy conditions outside, delaying DJs here and there, but also with some server issues in the house that we have resolved through the nerves of steel of Tex and the engineering booth. We want to give a huge shout out to Tex, and he's going to send us out today for the outro to this show with a really interesting tune I'll tell you about in just a minute. I would, however, before we sign out, like to also thank Bill for calling in and Kathy for their fabulous work with the Argus Farm Stand, supporting all these on-campus sustainability endeavors, but taking their roots deep, deep into the communities we live in and work in here, making a better world one step at a time. We've had a lot of musical themes today, from Patience to Sailing Away. This track is called Time, and it's off a Dub Syndica album called Acres of Space. Again, Pearl pulled it out of the archive for us, and I don't know what it's going to be like, but let's give it a listen as we segue into Brian's show. And thank you all for listening to WCBN-FM Ann Arbor. It's Hot in Here, signing off for the team, Rebecca Harden, and the Hot in Here team. Thanks again. Have a good weekend.